Welcome to the Young Turks. Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparyan with you guys. Lots of news in today's show, of course. I've got some of my favorite clips here are my old friend Ted Cruz with Gorsuch and how smarmy he is. You're going to love that. You're absolutely going to love it. And there's so many good stories here. What else do I have for you guys?
Voter fraud has happened.
You're going to be shocked at which party it comes from. And then Manafort. I have a declaration on Manafort. Official Russian agent. And that is literal. And we will explain. I believe he should be in prison. Whether it relates to Trump is a really interesting question. Slightly different question. So we'll get to that a little bit later in the program. Lots of exciting news. Speaking of exciting news. I want to tell you guys, we're almost at 1.5 million. Can I get that JesusTYTNetwork.com/go? What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you a picture of two of the people who might be hired. That we might actually breach it tonight. Maybe we should breach. I don't know. I'm just saying. Okay. Look at that. 494. Can I see?
We're so close.
Can I see 1.5? By the end of the show, can I see it?
Can we?
Can you show me graphic 23, Jesus? Two out of the three are in this picture. You want to see the picture? Here comes the picture. Oh no, they've been pixelated.
That's messed up.
Oh my God, who are they? Who are they? They're in the foreground there. Okay. Some people will begin to figure it out. Okay, anyway, let me see 1.5 by the end of today's show. Go, literally in that case. Okay, speaking of going, we start with a disaster story.
Yes, we do. A terror attack has occurred near the British Parliament, leaving four individuals dead. Now, this story is still developing, but there are some details that we do know at the moment. It was an attack outside the Parliament on Wednesday that left four people dead and injured 20 and prompted the evacuation of the Prime Minister. Now, this occurred when someone decided to mow through a crowd of people near the Parliament, and the driver of a large vehicle mowed down pedestrians on Westminster Bridge, which leads to Parliament, killing two people and injuring others. Now, of course, the death toll has increased since the New York Times reported on this story, before crashing into a railing. After the crash, at least one man left the vehicle, that's the suspect, and approached Parliament, where he stabbed an armed police officer to death and was fatally shot by other police. So the suspect is dead as of now, and as I mentioned, it is a developing story, so we don't know many details about the suspect other than the fact that he has been killed by police officers.
So whenever you're in the first 24 hours, you don't have complete information. The authorities in the UK say they are relatively confident that it was only one attacker, so they think they have it completely under control. People are, of course, wondering if it's an ISIS-related attack. They have not yet claimed responsibility, but it is their MO to use cars to run over people, including France, Germany, and other European countries where they've done that in the past. In this case, they use a car, then a knife, and then gets into Parliament. And it is on the one-year anniversary of the attacks in Belgium. So it is very, very likely to be connected to that. So right now, we don't know who the assailant was as we're doing this show live, but it would be fairly shocking if it was not a terror attack related to those earlier terror attacks, which was at least inspired by ISIS. And ISIS usually gives directions on how to carry out lone wolf attacks, meaning that there might not be any communication with ISIS, but that they say if you're gonna do it, the way you should do it is X, Y, and Z, and that usually involves first running people over with some sort of vehicle.
Right. I like that you made that clarification, because due to all the terror attacks that have occurred over the last few years in European countries like France and Belgium, it's much more difficult for organized terror plots to happen. A lot of authorities will be, they're able to essentially figure out that there's a planned terrorist attack and prevent it before it happens. But these lone wolf attacks are more likely to happen because while they might be ISIS inspired, it's harder to track them, right? So yeah. that's what we're seeing in this case, at least as it seems now with the details that we have. Again, we don't have all the details yet. It is a developing story, so we'll find out all the details later.
Okay, so the British authorities actually have been excellent at stopping terror attacks. In the last couple of years, they've stopped 13 attacks overall. The ones that are the hardest to stop are the ones that are not coordinated. When someone gets it in their crazy head to do this, and they don't communicate with anyone, including ISIS. So that's why ISIS might also be quote unquote late in taking responsibility, because they didn't realize it was happening. Again, we don't know that for sure yet. It's the first 24 hours. But you know, ISIS had the strategy that was interesting, which is attack everyone at once, almost everyone. And then we'll have the world's attention, and that will draw our allies to us and the people who are on our side, and we'll get more Muslims to become radical and to engage in this fight. And in the beginning, it seemed to be working, and they took a lot of territory in Iraq and Syria. Now we're at the downside of that, which is they're attacking everyone, and everyone is attacking back. And so this might be also in retaliation, and because they are worried about the attack against their capital, which is in Raqqa, Syria. Mm-hmm. So as troops are starting to bear down on Raqqa, this is ISIS lashing out, but it might not, it's overall not good news for them, and this is the long-term consequences of their actions. So, you know, they apparently or people that are sympathetic to them, we think killed four people here in the UK, but their days are far more numbered, and so as horrific as this is, it might be the kind of violent end spasms of this overly violent terrorist group to begin with. I mean, all terrorist groups are overly violent by definition, but ISIS broke records. But I hope they're on their way out.
I completely agree with you. At the same time, you know, the US needs to be careful with its own foreign policy. And so this is a separate story, but I think it's also important to mention it. There was recently a US led mission in Syria. And that mission ended with 33 civilians in a shelter for displaced Syrians dying, right? So 33 civilians lost their lives as a result. These are people that we need on our side. And so we need to be careful not to target civilians or to ensure that we're not accidentally, if it was an accident, attacking shelters that are housing innocent individuals who want no part of the violence. So no one's talking about that, and I understand why we value certain lives more than others. But again, 33 innocent civilians in Syria, as they were in a shelter, were killed due to a US mission. So just keep that in mind. US-led mission.
That's right. So that doesn't help the situation at all. And we lose our moral high ground, et cetera. Look, and I know that none of this is easy. And there's plenty of civilians who died under President Obama as well.
Yes.
We do know that this current president brags about being more careless. If we killed our family members, he views it as a positive thing. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. But obviously, tragic on both ends of that.
Absolutely. All right. An investigation has uncovered that Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign chairman from March to August of 2016, had very cozy ties to a very wealthy businessman in Russia who had a cozy relationship with Vladimir Putin. Now, the Associated Press reported the details of Manafort's business relationship with this individual in Russia and how it could potentially lead to some criminal charges against him because of the fact that he didn't follow the law in disclosing this relationship. So let me give you the details on that. Paul Manafort secretly worked for a Russian billionaire to advance the interests of Russian President Vladimir Putin a decade ago and proposed an ambitious political strategy to undermine anti-Russian opposition across former Soviet republics. Specifically, Manafort proposed in a confidential strategy plan as early as June 2005 that he would influence politics, business dealings, and news coverage inside the United States, Europe, and former Soviet republics to benefit the Putin government. So I'm going to stop right there. We actually have emails that Manafort had written, email correspondence showing, you know, what his strategy was and how he planned on working to, you know, garner up favor toward Vladimir Putin. It doesn't look good. And for the first time, we actually have some solid evidence of the ties that people in the Trump camp had with Russia.
So there's two parts of this that are clear. Manafort lied about his relationship with Russia. He claimed that he did not have any relationship with the Russian government. This is obvious from the emails that he did.
We have proof of that, too.
Yes.
We have proof of him completely denying it. Let's take a look at video number two.
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
Okay, so look, to be clear, that question was Trump specifically and whether or not he had ties to anyone in Russia. But Manafort's answer there is just so obvious in how he's lying. And so we have more details about what he did for Vladimir Putin, but jump in, Jake.
Yeah, two things that he's lying about. One is his relationship and secondly, about Trump's relationship. He tried to be lawyerly there and give the exact right answer without lying. It didn't work. It was super obvious that, and by the way, that is a question about Trump's financial dealings. So that's a much more weighty question. But now let's move on to Trump and Manafort's ties, which is that Manafort was his campaign chairman, the very top of the campaign. The only person that's higher than the campaign chairman is the candidate himself. So now they're trying to distance themselves from Manafort, but that is nonsense. And after you hear all the evidence, I'm going to suggest to you that Paul Manafort should be in prison.
Absolutely.
I'm not kidding. He's a Russian agent. And so the Associated Press has the emails. Go ahead, Anna.
All right. So Manafort pitched the plans to Russian aluminum magnate Oleg Deripaska, a close Putin ally with whom Manafort eventually signed a $10 million annual contract beginning in 2006. According to interviews with several people familiar with payments to Manafort and business records obtained by the Associated Press, Manafort and Deripaska maintained a business relationship until at least 2009, okay?
So let's pause there for a second to give you a sense of how much money he might have gotten. Now, the Associated Press does not know the final number. They only know the information they have access to. And they have access to multi-million dollar checks going across the wire, okay? So they know there was multi-million dollar payments. They know that it was the contract was set to be $10 million a year. If it was from 06 to 09, that would be $40 million. Now that gives you a lot of incentive to be a foreign agent. Now, what does it mean to be a foreign agent? It just simply means that you're working for a foreign government, which by the way, a lot of people do, but you have to register and let the American government know that you are a foreign agent. So that means, hey, you raise your hand and you say, I am lobbying for this group and I'm doing it for political reasons. So Manafort never did that and received a giant amount of money that he clearly in some ways hid, and he did not do it under the umbrella group that was public facing that he normally lobbied for. He did it under another name. Mm-hmm. So another way that he was trying to hide these giant payments.
Exactly. And what he was doing essentially worked against the best interests of America. So let me give you the details on an email that he had written in regard to how he planned on helping Putin and how he wanted to garner support for Putin in the West. So he says, we are now on the belief that this model can greatly benefit the Putin government if employed at the correct levels with the appropriate commitment to success. The effort will be offering a great service that can refocus both internally and externally the policies of the Putin government, essentially allowing the policies of the Putin government to influence the policies of other countries, mainly the United States.
So, good night, Irene. That is very clear evidence in an email written by Manafort that he did in fact work for the Putin government, something he has denied all along and something that he absolutely had to register with the US government. That is breaking clear laws as not registering with a foreign agent. Now he's doing it through $10 million payments to a Russian oligarch. A Russian oligarch that is deeply tied to Putin, goes on almost every business and foreign trip with him. And clearly in the emails, there's no hiding it. He's not saying, hey, I'm doing this for your aluminum business.
Right.
He's saying, I'm doing it for Putin government interests, internally meaning the Russia, externally meaning former Soviet republics, Central Asian countries, European countries, and yes, the US.
Yep.
So if you, and by the way, doing that is not necessarily illegal, but you have to register and say you're a foreign agent. If you don't do that, then it is illegal and you belong in prison.
Right. So again, just to clarify how comfortable or how cozy the relationship is between this oligarch and Vladimir Putin, the Associated Press reports that US diplomatic cables from 2006 described this oligarch as among the 2 to 3 oligarchs Putin turns to on a regular basis and a more or less permanent fixture on Putin's trips abroad. Also, keep in mind that Manafort proposed extending his existing work in Eastern Europe to Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and Georgia, where he pledged to bolster the legitimacy of governments friendly to Putin and undercut anti-Russian figures through political campaigns, nonprofit front groups, and media operations. And by the way, he worked closely with individuals in Ukraine to essentially help Russia in their annexation of Crimea. And so,
that's against U.S. interests. So, Paul Manafort working as a Russian foreign agent, literally technical definition of that word. And this is, by the way, not when he was with the Trump campaign. So let's be clear about that. I'm going to get to his role in the Trump campaign in a minute. Okay. Working as a Russian foreign agent, never reports to the U.S., working against U.S. interests in most of those countries, especially the Ukraine, and doing it in secret and lying about it throughout. Okay, those are heavy charges, and now with the internal emails, pretty much corroborated. It is corroborated. Now, whether he will spend time in prison is a matter that has to be adjudicated, I hope, in a court of law. I hope that they bring him to trial. For hiding his true allegiance, which was not to the US government. To give you a sense of how important and why do they hire Manafort, right? So why do they give him $10 million a year, $40 million overall if he got the full contract? Well, he not only worked on Trump's campaign, he also worked on McCain's campaign back in 2008. And that was in this time period. So they have bought themselves an agent that is as close to the power in this country as you can possibly get, works at the highest levels of different Republicans running for president, and then works those guys over to have pro-Russian policies. Now, he was a campaign manager for Donald Trump, who winds up becoming president. And what does Donald Trump have? Enormously pro-Russian policies that undercut our earlier American positions.
That's right.
So now you can say that's a coincidence, or I mean, is really, are people that naive? This guy, and I'm again, this is about Manafort, not about Trump. That Manafort gets $40 million from the Russians at some point, let alone later work that he did in 2014, again for the Russians in Ukraine. That's a whole different story in another time that he worked for the Russians. And then he happens to tell Trump, oh, you should have all these pro-Russian policies. You think that's a coincidence? Nobody in their right mind thinks that that's a coincidence.
Right. So naturally, look, there is an investigation into Trump and his ties or potential ties to Russia and Vladimir Putin. And I hope that the following question is asked as a result of the Associated Press unearthing this information. How is it that Manafort ended up being the campaign chair?
That's a great question.
So I want to know why. Why is he the campaign chair? And then here's the follow-up question to that. So Manafort had a cozy relationship with this oligarch who paid him tens of millions of dollars until something happened a couple years ago. So a few years ago, Manafort was given about $19 million to start a media company that would push all of these ridiculous ideas, right? And so Manafort pocketed the money and then didn't do anything. He didn't start the media company at all. And so that's when the relationship between Manafort and this oligarch soured. And so they were aggressively going after Manafort for this money until Trump got elected. And then when Trump got elected, they just decided, it's all right. We're just gonna let this go.
That's super interesting, and it can actually cut in two different directions. So when you're looking at it for Trump, so this Manafort guy is unbelievable. He appears to be a very serious criminal. So here's what I mean by that. This guy's, he not only did he get all the money from the Russian oligarchs for all those years, and then he appears to rip them off to the point where a Russian oligarch makes a public display of it by having to sue him in the Cayman Islands. That happens in 2014, because in that deal, which was for the Black Sea cable, he was supposed to start a TV company. They sent him the $19 million, and then they never hear from them again. Like, they email him, hey, what happened to the $19 million? Did you start the cable company? And he never responds to them again. He appears to have just pocketed the $19 million.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's got some nerve on him. So you might say, hey, maybe that's when they cut off relations. And then Trump hired him several years later. Mm-hmm. And so that you could say maybe it's not related to Trump in that sense. Or, as Anna pointed out, well, Paul, there is a way that you can get right with the Russian oligarchs and not pay them that money back, get inside the Trump team and make sure that they're okay with us taking Crimea, make sure they lift the sanctions that are worth $500 billion with ExxonMobil, etc. Now, that part is not yet proven, but under these circumstances should clearly be deeply investigated.
Right. It's just all very strange. And again, he was supposed to start that media company in 2014. So it wasn't that long ago. Early in 2016, during the presidential campaign, the oligarch's representatives openly accused Manafort of fraud and pledged to recover the money from him. After Trump earned the nomination, the oligarch's representatives said they would no longer discuss the case. So I think that that's a strange thing that should be investigated. Again, all we can do right now is speculate. And so please don't take anything I say too seriously because it's speculation. But an investigation needs to take place. Thankfully, it is being taken. It is taking place. And hopefully they ask the right questions and look into all of these issues.
So let me explain again. This is our third time clarifying what is and is not speculation. So it is not speculation that Manafort worked for the Russians. It is Manafort's own words that he said, I worked for the Putin government and I am looking to help him with his policies internally and externally. It is not speculation that it is a violation of the law. Let me read you graphic 13 here. Under the Foreign Agents Registration Act, people who lobby in the US on behalf of foreign political leaders or political parties must provide detailed reports about their actions to the department. And if they don't, that prison sentence can be up to 5 years in prison and a fine of $250,000.
Which, by the way, is honestly not much.
I mean, if you've already taken $40 million this time and $19 million another time, and let alone all the things we don't know about Manafort and how much more he took for the Ukraine job, yes, $250,000 is no big deal. 5 years in prison, that is a big deal. And so I'm looking forward to that happening. The speculation part is, how much does Trump know? Mm-hmm. And we don't know that yet. Newt Gingrich goes out there and says, now Trump should say he didn't know anything about that. Now Newt doesn't know that Trump didn't know anything about that. Mm-hmm. But he goes on and talks to the media and says, now the thing to say here is, you didn't know anything about it. And once you did, you fired him right away. And besides which, the administration is claiming, Manafort, what name so?
That's right. So they're, of course, trying to distance themselves as much as possible from Manafort. During a press conference, Sean Spicer did exactly that, or attempted to, even though a lot of people scoffed at it, including White House officials. Let's go to graphic 10. So Sean Spicer said Monday that Manafort played a very limited role for a very limited amount of time in the campaign. He was the campaign chair, okay, for several months, from March to August of 2016. That is not a limited time. That is a very pivotal time in an election. And so even though his campaign chairman, he led it during the crucial run up to the Republican National Convention.
So let me explain that more. So March to August, it involved 18 primary contests, including when he clinched in Indiana. First person he thanked was Paul Manafort, Trump, okay? And all the way to the Republican National Convention. Now you say March to August, that's not even a full year. The campaign is not that much longer. Remember, it starts in January, officially starts in January with the Iowa caucus and goes till November. March through August is most of that time period. So now unofficially started a little bit while before that, but it is a giant chunk of the campaign that this Russian agent was running Trump's campaign. Mm-hmm. So we know now that a Russian agent was running Trump's campaign. And by the way, all the people telling me that there was no evidence of Russia and Trump connections. What happened now? Okay, it looks like there's evidence. Now, to what degree Trump knows, we don't know. But from him backpedaling, going like, Manafort, very limited role, very limited time. Total and utter nonsense. He had a gigantic role for the most pivotal time. They're like, oh, he only worked till August. Well, what does that leave? September, October.
Yeah.
It only leaves basically 2 months before the election in the beginning of November.
And also in Trump's perfect world, where evidence clears him and he really didn't know about Manafort's cozy ties to Vladimir Putin. It's inconceivable that Manafort, who's obviously very pro-Russia, didn't influence Donald Trump in any way or influence the campaign in any way to be more pro-Russia as a result of his cozy ties to Vladimir Putin, right? So I don't know, Donald Trump might be completely innocent, but we know that he's not the smartest, you know, person in the world, not the sharpest tool in the shed. So is he easily impressionable? Absolutely. And so if this guy is in the campaign, he's a campaign chair and he's very pro-Russia, he might have had an impact there.
Yeah, I mean, Trump's best case scenario is, hey, remember, I'm a total moron, so I got played by this guy and I couldn't tell that he was a Russian agent. So he got me to do every single thing that Russia wanted. But I thought it was for the best. I was too stupid to figure out that he's actually working for the Russians. So that's his best defense. Now, last thing on this is interesting side note here. When you look at the emails on how he was trying to get positive policies, whether in favor of the Putin government, whether it was here in the US or Uzbekistan or in Ukraine or anywhere else, he would go pay off legal experts at universities, including here, Duke University, NYU, etc. He would go fund people that worked at scholars that worked at think tanks, and they would come up with fake, and they, I'm sure they claim, no, these are real things as to why Putin is right and the Russian interests are so wonderful. But in reality, they're getting paid by Manafort, and Manafort's getting paid by a Russian oligarch. And he works the media. So these guys are all connected in the Washington circles, and they do this in other countries, and they do this kind of propaganda right here in America. So they go work their friends in the media, in academia, and the so-called think tanks. The think tanks are almost completely useless. They're all propaganda outlets on the left or the right.
Except for our think tank here on TYT Network.
Which is on youtube.com/think tank. That's completely different. Could you imagine if Manafort was funding that? Anyway. Believe me, we have no funding for that. Anyway, so that's how they do propaganda. So the next time you see something in the press or through a think tank, ironically, think twice about it, because probably somebody paid for it. Right. Okay, all right, we got to take a quick break here. When we come back, the Gorsuch hearings. Are the Democrats fighting back enough? And the smarmy Cruz interaction with Gorsuch that you will love when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks, let me read a couple of tweets here at hashtag TYT Live. Angelica Shorty says, I think it's official, I'm addicted to TYT. Staying late at work so I don't miss you guys during the commute. Hubby won't be happy. I love it, Angelica, I love it. By the way, if you're a member, you could not only stream it whenever you want, you could download it and then watch it during your commute. I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying. TYTnetwork.com/join. That, of course, wouldn't be live. Keeping it real. Live, you either watch or don't watch, but right after the show is over or close to thereafter, if you're a member, you can download it anytime you want. Okay, Ben Peck says, Manafort sounded like me lying to my mom the first time she found some of my browsing history as a teenager.
Damn.
Okay.
I love how Ben Peck just like completely admitted to like browsing questionable stuff.
Well, I mean, like, who are we kidding? Who are we kidding, right? Anyway, Tensai Badger says, given the way Trump doesn't run his businesses, I wouldn't say this means he knew, but it's definitely a great reason to investigate. I think that's exactly right. Nobody's exactly convinced that he knew what was going on because he's such a knucklehead. Okay. TYTnetwork.com/go, $27 from Keaton in Oregon, $31 from Catherine in the United Kingdom, $222 from Seabrook in California. Dang. Can I see where we are right now?
Da, 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 da.
You guys are unbelievable. You're unbelievable. 1.5 million. We crossed the barrier there. Now, look, there's an official way that we're going to announce things, so I can't do it right now, but we will be doing it very soon, obviously, at a worst case scenario on Friday, but I'm going to try, we're trying really hard to make sure we can announce it by tomorrow. And like I said, you're going to love these three names, this time three guys that we're going to share with you. And let's keep it going. There's only about 38 days or so left till the first 100 days of Trump. And by the way, no, there's only two cameras taken so far. There's like five, six cameras in the studio that you can name after yourself. And then we call those cameras by your name. We put your name on them for a long time, as we did with the studio crew. This desk is still available to be named for $10,000. The chairs, this is the Nick Wilde chair from the old studio build. How cool would it be to be, have the Ben Peck desk at TYT headquarters?
We're calling you out, Ben Peck.
I'm just saying, okay?
Calling you out.
Try to explain that to your mom. Mom, I kind of put $10,000 on the credit card. No, I'm kidding, I'm kidding. Don't do anything you can't afford, for God's sake. But we do appreciate you supporting real journalism in this country. All right, what's next, Anna?
All right. The Senate Judiciary Committee is hearing all of the answers that Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch has in regard to their questions. And of course, this is the confirmation hearing, and it's important that he convince Democrats to vote for him, because we need at least 8 Democrats to vote in his favor in order for him to get confirmed. But of course, Democrats are holding out because they're still pretty upset about what happened with Merrick Garland, who was President Obama's nominee to replace Antonin Scalia. Now, Mitch McConnell is probably the best part about all of this, because he doesn't understand that, hey, you know, if you act like a dick, then maybe people are going to act like a dick in response to you being a dick, right? So let's take a look at what he had to say about Democrats holding out on Neil Gorsuch.
Yet I haven't seen a single Democrat, unless they're one you've observed, indicate they were prepared to either vote for cloture or to vote for him, leading you to ask the following question. If Judge Gorsuch can't achieve 60 votes in the Senate, could any judge appointed by a Republican president be approved with 60 or more votes in the Senate? If they don't find Gorsuch acceptable, are they taking the position that the vacancy should never be filled? At all? Last year they were complaining about there being a vacancy for roughly a year.
Yeah, they were complaining that there was a vacancy for roughly a year because you guys refused to even hear Merrick Garland out, have a hearing for him, right? You guys didn't want to play ball. What makes you think the Democrats are going to turn around and just play ball?
Is there no one to ask the question of, have you no shame? Like, you're the guy who said that you would block any justice under Obama indefinitely. Now you're turning around pretending to be outraged that the Democrats are not blocking it, they're just not voting in favor of him. They have no obligation to vote in favor of him or to vote in favor of cloture. And he's like, how dare they even delay this for 1 minute? When you delayed it for a year.
Not only did they delay it for a year, remember, during the election, no one, including Republicans, expected Donald Trump to win. And so they assumed that Hillary Clinton was going to win and become the next president, and that she would be able to nominate a judge. And guess what Republicans said about a potential Hillary nominee? Take a look.
If Judge Gorsuch can't achieve 60 votes in the Senate, could any judge appointed by a Republican president be approved with 60 or more votes in the Senate?
I promise you that we will be united against any Supreme Court nominee that that Hillary Clinton, if she were president, would put up. And I promise you.
Last year they were complaining about there being a vacancy for roughly a year.
Senator Cruz, he did talk about this last week in Colorado, and he said there's long precedent for there being less than the 9 justices we've become accustomed to.
Are they taking the position that the vacancy should never be filled? At all?
If Hillary Clinton becomes president, I'm going to do everything I can do to make sure that 4 years from now, we've still got an opening on the Supreme Court.
Good.
So when Republicans do it, they're strong, right? But when Democrats refuse to vote for a nominee that they might not even agree with, what's wrong with them? What's wrong with them? If they can't vote for him, they're not going to vote for anyone.
So I'm not surprised that Republicans are breaking records on hypocrisy, and they don't care. They lie through their teeth. They do it all the time. They're doing it brazenly in this context. What annoys me is the press. So it is not objective to say Republicans say this and the Democrats say that. Mm-hmm. It is objective to point out that the Republicans are giant hypocrites on this. On different issues, you could have different opinions. On this, you just saw it for yourself. They said that they would not, they threatened to never allow a Hillary Clinton nominee. You just heard it with your own ears. So now for McConnell to say that he's outraged that the Democrats won't vote in favor of a nominee that they completely disagree with, and for the press to treat that even, like, oh, I can't tell who's right, who's wrong. No, your headline should say Republicans are hypocritical on this issue. I know for the press, they're like, heart attack. Oh my God, that would be factual. I can't do that. It would seem biased to point out that they are wrong. It's not biased, it's factual. It's factual. Do your goddamn job. So now, can the Democrats actually do anything about Gorsuch? Well, yeah. They could actually filibuster him, and very likely they will. Schumer says all you need is one Democratic senator to call for it, and then you're going to need 60 votes. That's technically a filibuster. My guess is that Bernie Sanders can probably raise his hand, among others. Okay, and since this is an easy political issue for the Democrats, probably all the guys who are angling for the presidency will raise their hands even before Bernie Sanders. So. It's a layup in this case. So now McConnell says, no, I would like to keep the filibuster, but he will be confirmed by April 8th, period. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if they filibuster, I'm just going to get rid of the filibuster.
Right.
Now, all those years the Democrats were in power, oh my God, the filibuster, oh, it's so important. We got to let the Republicans block everything we do. The minute the Republicans are in power, April 8th, that's like a couple of weeks from now. They're like, oh, there's a guy up, and if you guys don't do exactly what we tell you to do, within 2 weeks we'll kill this filibuster that you protected for decades and decades and decades, and we pretended was really important, and that we thought was an important part of Senate tradition, history, yada, yada. We were lying. We're Republicans. We don't care. We will immediately shred all the rules, do whatever the hell we want. And the Democrats, you will bow your goddamn heads.
And they will. That's the problem. They will bow their goddamn heads, right? And it's the case with pretty much everything. You see the hypocrisy with everything. The second Republicans are in power, the second Donald Trump gets elected, what does he do? One executive order after another, one executive action after another, which is what Obama was criticized for like crazy. But the criticism is all BS, right? It's the same thing that they want to do, except they want to do it 10 times more. And so that's what's happening with these Senate hearings. And look, Republicans are incredibly strong compared to Democrats. And unfortunately, there's strength in a moral way and strength in an immoral way. They're strong in an immoral way. They don't care about hypocrisy. They don't care about the fact that they're lying because they know the media isn't going to cover them in a negative fashion. They know that they're going to, you know, get the media neutrality that you can enjoy on networks like CNN, and they get away with it, right? And so Democrats don't fight back hard enough.
God, it just drives me crazy. Okay, first of all, JusticeDemocrats.com. Okay, I guarantee you, we had a couple of senators who were Justice Democrats, that this situation would be a little different. By the way, why does the media get to call everything even? Because the Democrats don't fight back. And they don't say, hey, New York Times, it is your responsibility to say that the Republicans are being hypocrites in this case, because it is a fact. We can prove it, right? Do a giant press conference, play the tapes. Just take what we just did in that earlier segment, play it, right? But they won't do it, they won't do it. So I'm going to show you the two toughest things that the Democrats asked Gorsuch. And how he deflected them so easily, right? Now, mind you, these are the toughest. The rest of it was okay, long-winded questions that barely grazed them. But let me show you the best they had.
Here's a live example right now. We have this $10 million that is being spent on behalf of your confirmation. Do you think, for instance, that we on this panel ought to know who is behind that? And, well, answer that and then I'll go on to a related question.
Senator, that's a policy question for this body.
Well, it's also a question of disclosure. You could ask right now that as a matter of courtesy, as a matter of respect to the process, that anybody who is funding this should declare themselves so that we can evaluate who is behind this effort.
Senator.
Right? That wouldn't be a policy determination. That would be your values determination.
It would be a politics question. And I'm not, with all respect, Senator, going to get involved in politics.
Okay, I can't stand the smarminess of Gorsuch. And God, the mainstream media loves him. Mika Brzezinski and everyone else. They're like, oh, what a professional. He's so good. He's more right-wing than Antonin Scalia, which makes him a little left of Attila the Hun. But they're like, oh, he can speak in complete sentences. Yes, yes, right? And now, so that was one of the toughest questions the Democrats asked. And it's a super fair question. Hey, there's secret groups, dark money groups, spending $10 million to make sure they put you on the Supreme Court. Can you just tell us who it is? He's like, that's a political question. No, it's not a political question. They're spending money. They're buying you a seat. Who are they? You're not going to answer who's buying you this seat? Well, can you not see? Can you at least not see? Because it is very relevant to the job you're about to have if you're on the Supreme Court. That gives the appearance of corruption. Because in Citizens United, they said that there was not even an appearance of corruption. When someone's paying $10 million to put you on the Supreme Court, are you telling me, Gorsuch, that doesn't give the appearance of corruption? That's a political question. No, it's not. It goes to the heart of how you will decide cases like Citizens United. If you're not going to answer that, then we have no information at all on what you're going to do in the Supreme Court. I vote no immediately. If you don't answer a single goddamn question, I vote no immediately. I call for a filibuster right now. Now, you'll never see a Democrat get worked up like that. I mean, Franken got a tiny bit frustrated. He called one of his opinions absurd, to say the least. And the media was like, Al Franken getting out of line. Oh my God, if you saw it.
We're going to have a conversation about the word absurd being out of line. I mean, in this era, in the Trump era, absurd is the weakest possible insult that you can tell anyone in government right now.
All right, and one final one. Here's the, again, these are, I'm not showing you the soft stuff. I'm showing you the hardest that the Democrats have, okay? This is the second toughest question.
If the Republicans had followed the Constitution and practiced, Chief Judge Merrick Garland would be on the Supreme Court today. I also respected you for calling Chief Judge Garland when your nomination was announced. And I understand you respect him as a jurist. Is that correct?
Very much so, Senator. Whenever I see his name attached to an opinion, it's one I read with special care. He's an outstanding judge.
Do you think he was treated fairly by this committee, yes or no?
Senator, as I explained to you before, I can't get involved in politics. And there's judicial canons that prevent me from doing that. And I think it would be very imprudent of judges to start commenting on political disputes between themselves or the various branches.
Days and days of him saying, it's a political question, I can't answer it. But Leahy, at least he brought up the right question, but he framed it all wrong. Was he treated unfairly? No, the question is, do you think that it is the constitutional responsibility of the Senate to confirm justices? That's a constitutional question, that's not a political question. Now, if you say, no, the Republicans were right, they have no constitutional duty to confirm justices, great, I don't confirm you, get the hell out. Okay, you just told me that it's perfectly constitutional for me to never confirm any of the justices that a president puts up. If you think that it's unconstitutional, okay, then I have my answer. What the Republicans did last year was unconstitutional. Thank you very much. But he just keeps saying, that's a political question. And the Democrats go, oh, okay, let's go on to the next question. Okay, so look, I don't mind those two questions, but this is not how you effectively and strongly challenge a guy like Gorsuch. I mean, they never, like, because part of it is, and you got to understand, in Washington, they play patty cakes. So they're so polite to one another. Gorsuch is friends with a lot of these people. And he went to the same schools. He goes to, and some of the Obama people were thrilled because they went to school with him that he was nominated. And it doesn't matter that he's to the right of Antonin Scalia and will shred some of our civil liberties But I do declare he is such a well-spoken gentleman coming from the same circles as us. So you play patty cakes all day long. You think these Democrats are going to stop these guys with Mitch McConnell saying, I'm bulldozing him in through April 8th?
No, they're not. I mean, have they really successfully stopped anyone? I mean, Betsy DeVos. Betsy DeVos is a nightmare. They barely even fought against Betsy DeVos. So anyway.
JusticeDemocrats.com. Okay, let's go on to Cruz.
All right. Senator Ted Cruz has a massive hard-on for Neil Gorsuch. And if you don't believe me, take a quick look at this next video.
You began your career with the opportunity to serve as a law clerk to Byron White. Byron White is an extraordinary man. Byron White was the only justice that John F. Kennedy put on the Supreme Court. Byron White is, I believe, in fact, I'm quite certain, the only Supreme Court justice in history to lead the NFL in rushing, and also to graduate first in his class from Yale Law School. Could you share with this committee what it was like to be a law clerk for Byron White and to interact with him every day during your clerkship?
You know, as I said, he really was my childhood hero. And to actually get picked out of the pile, to spend a year with him, as Senator Lee's dad did, that's something we share in common too, was and remains the privilege of a lifetime. He'd sit down in my office, plunk himself down in a chair across the desk, we'd be talking about a case and say, Always started with a grunt. I mean, that's how he started a conversation. It was like, hello. So what does the great Justice Gorsuch think about this one? Okay. And then he'd go back and he'd think about it himself.
Later they would go on and make out.
What was that? Can you tell me how great it was to, are these questions that are relevant to the American people or Neil Gorsuch's interpretation of the Constitution and how he plans on, you know, voting in certain cases that will affect everyone's life? I don't care about Byron White's history and how he was in the NFL or played in the, I don't know what the fuck he did with the NFL. I don't care, right? This is ridiculous. Like, this is the most ridiculous interaction I've seen in a hearing. Probably ever.
So look, they're doing a couple of things. One, they're running out the clock. So they're just wasting time so that he can just get confirmed. Second thing is that they're trying to put a positive spin on Gorsuch. So they ask him these softball questions, which allows him to give folksy answers. This is all pre-planned. So then he gives a story about how, and then he would grunt before his answer.
Oh, yeah.
So folksy. That's so folksy. Yeah, yeah. Right? Oh, so folksy. Okay. And then the third thing is, Cruz gets to use this as a way to brag to his conservative voters. Look at me having a man crush on Gorsuch. I told you we'd get somebody who's the right wing, so more right wing than Scalia. Mm-hmm. And he can't help himself. And that's where our legendary producer, Jared Jackson, zooms in on his face. Okay. And he's like, and the way that they smugly smile at one another is infuriating. But you look, tip of the iceberg, they did this for literally ad nauseum, okay?
Yeah.
But we're going to give you just one more clip because I can't subject you more to anything more than that. But he wasn't done with Brian White yet. Watch this.
Now, you and I both had the experience of clerking at the Supreme Court after Justice White had ended his time on the basketball court.
Yeah.
Maybe you were luckier than I. For those who do not know, above the Supreme Court, above the roof of the courtroom, is a basketball court, which is referred to tongue in cheek as the highest court in the land. And Justice White, for many years, would play in the basketball games. NFL Hall of Fame football player with a bunch of pencil neck law clerks.
Yep.
And his elbows and fouls were legendary. When I was clerking, he was no longer playing. Perhaps, were you lucky enough to get him up on the basketball court?
He would come up for a game of horse with the clerks, former law clerks at reunions.
How's his jump shot?
His best shot at that age was from the free throw line back up over his head like that. And he could hit it
pretty regularly. His eye-hand coordination was just uncanny. And he'd ask me, Ron, how many of these guys you honestly recognize? And I was one of those pencil-necked law clerks. And the truth was, I thought I knew a lot about the Supreme Court.
Oh, Byron White's jump shot. I see we've gotten to something relevant.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay. And no, he said it, Gorsuch did, with such drama. Like, yeah. No, a game of horse.
No, the whole thing, I mean, the way Ted Cruz asked the question is full of drama, right? Like, can you tell me, were you lucky enough to, as soon as he started that question, I rolled my eyes, like, were you lucky enough to see him play basketball?
These are the serious jurists that the Republicans claim that they are, and they care so much about the Constitution that they don't ask him any questions about the Constitution. All they do is ask him about Byron White's jump shot. And finally, let me add one point of serious analysis here. One of the things that Cruz did ask about was originalism. So this is the doctrine that conservatives believe in, that you should take the founding fathers' words with their original intent, mm-hmm, and not have the Constitution be a living, breathing document that we affect in these generations. So let me quote.
Sounds like a smart idea. It's not like society evolves in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Anna, here's someone who agrees with you, Thomas Jefferson. So here's what Jefferson said. No society can make a perpetual constitution or even a perpetual law. The earth belongs always to the living generation. So if you were trying to find the original intent of the founding fathers, the guy who wrote the Declaration of Independence and had a huge hand in helping James Madison write the Constitution, said that it should be a living document. Mm-hmm. It should not be just the original intent. In fact, I'm going to give you one more quote from Jefferson. Some men look at constitutions with sanctimonious reverence. Oh, what a great way to describe Cruz and Gorsuch today. And deem them like the Ark of the Covenant, too sacred to be touched, who ascribe to the men of preceding age a wisdom more than human, and suppose what they did to be beyond amendment. Let us follow no such examples, nor weakly believe that one generation is not as capable as another of taking care of itself and of ordering its own affairs. So if you actually cared about the original intent of the founding fathers, you would have none of the judicial beliefs of Gorsuch or Cruz, let alone their beliefs about Byron White's basketball game. I do have to confess, it's kind of cool that there is a basketball court above the Supreme Court, which I didn't know.
The highest court.
It's the highest court of the land. All right, we got to take a break here, guys. We'll be right back.
Can you imagine starting every conversation with a grunt, like you're about to do a job interview? And they're like, okay, tell me what you bring to the table.
And by the way, that folksy story was about how he would actually listen to other human beings. Wow, including his law clerks. That's the whole point of a law clerk. That's like Anna saying, oh, Cenk, in the production meetings, he would say, what do you think, Anna? Oh, what a great man. What a great, what the fuck else are you supposed to say?
Yeah.
Why are you even having the meeting if you don't care what they say? Anyway, all right, Mitch Fallon says, Mitch McConnell is just disgraced to Mitches everywhere. Gabby Morita says, Democrats are more concerned with not insulting the people who go to their cocktail parties than they are with representing voters. Unfortunately, very true. Heiserberg says, is this a confirmation hearing or an audition for Pivot Man in the great Republican circle jerk?
I was gonna say circle jerk when we were covering the story. I'm trying to clean up my language, so I'm abstaining from that type of talk. But yeah, that was a huge circle jerk. Like, anyway,
yeah.
I feel like we needed to see Cruz's hands on the table, because we couldn't, and it was strange.
So. Okay, so I have to say that I don't think I'm versed well enough in the circle jerk phenomenon. Can there be a two-person circle jerk, or is that just, Making hand love to one another. Don't you need a third person for a circle? And then furthermore, what's the pivot man in a circle jerk? I just don't know enough about this.
Oh, I don't know what the pivot man is either.
Yeah, I mean, so Heisenberg, maybe you could educate us. But I'm now amused by the idea of Ted Cruz asking those questions. So when Byron White was circle jerking you, what was his favorite shot? Was it the money shot? He would actually do it like this, right above his head. Anyway, finally, Dan's Mon Arbre says it is obnoxious that we pay politicians more than minimum wage
and give them health care.
I know. Just looking at those guys. And the reason, by the way, they got to get them approved by April 8th is because they're going to go on a giant recess. When are they not in recess?
No, they've been working very hard.
Oh,
okay,
Jesus
very
Christ.
Hard.
All right, donors to the journalism campaign: $27 from Lars in California, $100 from John in Georgia, $127 from Rebecca in Arizona. Much love. What's next?
All right. Oftentimes, when you hear accusations of voter fraud, it's Republicans accusing Democrats of engaging in that type of behavior. Well, it turns out that we now have Steve Curtis, former chairman of the Colorado Republican Party, accused of engaging in voter fraud himself. In fact, his ex-wife had moved to a different state and wanted to register to vote in that state and realized that she wasn't able to do so because she was registered in Colorado. And then after an investigation took place, she was able to find that her ex-husband, Steve Curtis, had voted in her name, registered her to vote in Colorado and voted under her name, okay, for Donald Trump. So I think it's super interesting, especially when you consider the fact that this individual gave an interview accusing Democrats of voter fraud. Take a look.
Want to be called a name, no matter how false it is, and then the Democrats just do what they want. And it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that virtually every case of voter fraud I can remember in my lifetime was committed by Democrats. Am I onto something here, or do I just not have the facts?
Absolutely. I did a few years ago. There were, and they commit voter fraud against one another as well.
So virtually every case of voter fraud in his lifetime committed by Democrats, oops, except for him, which by the way is not true, except for a lot of Republicans. Funny enough, almost every case of voter fraud that we've covered on the show has been more systematic done by Republican officials.
Right.
Now, there was one giant case back in 2012, but the Democrats, and I remember Nancy Pelosi speaking about this, they said they didn't want to make a big deal out of it because it would only help the Republicans because claim that voter fraud's a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually let the Republicans get away with voter fraud without much publicity at all these days. And they're the ones that keep doing it. And this guy got caught with his hand in the cookie jar. His ex-wife said was, quote, livid that mm-hmm. he did this. She had no participation in it at all. And she found it demeaning and presumptuous.
Right, exactly. So again, he's the one engaging in voter fraud. And he has been charged as a result with forgery and voter fraud. And look, voter fraud to me has become a case of whoever smelt it, dealt it, right? The people that make the biggest deal about voter fraud are the individuals who are engaging in voter fraud or have been tempted to engage in voter fraud, right? Like, because regular individuals don't think about it and they don't obsess about it. Republicans obsess about it either because they're projecting or because they want to do away with certain voting rights that would benefit Democrats, right? Make it harder for the elderly or students to vote with these voter ID laws. Yeah. That's what it's really about. It's about getting enough support to elect individuals that they want for their party, not Democrats.
And minorities, of course.
And so, minorities,
and,
yes.
And the bottom line is it goes to the same goal, which is by hook or by crook, I'm going to get Republicans elected. If I have to say that you're going to have less voting booths in minority areas or college campuses, and so restrict people's voters' rights. If it says voter ID laws, so 25% of African Americans in the country who don't have driver licenses because they live in urban areas or they can't afford a car, etc. I'm going to do it so that Republicans win. I don't care if it restricts voting rights. And if it means I have to do voter fraud myself to get Republicans to win, well, then that's what I'll do. Because that's the Republicans are by hook or by crook.
What I don't understand is, was it worth it? I mean, was it really worth it? Because it's one vote, and you're now facing serious charges because you engaged in this criminal activity just to cast one more ballot in Trump's favor. Was it worth it?
Because he can't help himself. That's the way that he thinks. I don't care by any means necessary. So speaking of by hook or by crook, they caught him on camera and asked him to explain this. You're gonna love how guilty he looks here. Let's watch.
Did you vote for your ex-wife in the last election, Steve?
We're not going to talk about this.
I'm going to talk about it. Did you vote for your ex-wife in the last election? Do you owe her an apology? Steve, does this affect your credibility with the radio listeners?
To say the least.
He don't like that. We're not going to talk about that. By the way, he was like way in his personal space.
Yeah.
In Rob Lowe's personal space.
I love that reporting, and I loved his, I'm so guilty, we're not going to talk about this. And it's not a random dude. It's not a low-level official. That is the former chairman of the Republicans in Colorado, the chairman of the Republican Party in that state, stone cold busted.
All right, one more story for you in the first hour, which is of course longer than an hour, but still we're having fun, especially because I'm on it. all right. There is a growing number of former Trump supporters coming forward and explaining that they are experiencing a serious case of buyer's remorse. Case in point, Craig Moss, who was recently interviewed by CNN. Take a look.
How's it going? Craig Moss was a true believer in Donald Trump.
100% Trump supporter, there is no other choice.
During the presidential campaign, he followed Trump to 45 rallies across the U.S. And he did it for a very personal reason.
I came home and found my son Rob J.R. Moss dead in his bed, and it was devastating to me.
We will help all of those people so seriously addicted. We'll get them assistance.
Moss believed Trump's campaign promises, especially when Trump reached out to him at a rally.
And I know what you went through, and he's a great father. I can see it. And your son is proud of you. Your son is proud of you.
Tell me about this guitar. Do you play this guitar anymore?
Nope.
Why not?
Not on the Trump trail anymore, and I've lost my heart to play the Trump songs.
Moss, who believes his son might still be alive if he'd had health insurance, can't believe Trump supports the Republican health care plan. It would increase the number of uninsured Americans, and it would end the Obamacare requirement that the 31 states with expanded Medicaid cover addiction services.
I believed everything he said.
And now?
No, I don't believe that he was true in his word when he was speaking. I think he was looking for votes, to be honest with you. It's not at all what Mr. Trump promised everybody he was going to provide for us. And I feel that now. I feel hurt inside.
Now that Moss has changed his tune, the only song he wanted to sing for us is a song he wrote in memory of his son.
Thinking about the times we spent together.
So I often criticize CNN, but that was a great report. I'm really glad they did that, and we'll have the link below for it so you guys can watch it. I actually feel terrible for this guy.
Of course.
And no, I say that because during the campaign and after the campaign, we often made fun of Trump voters, and we criticized them, and I think we've been proven right, but. We would also add, guys, remember, we're actually trying to look out for them. I know they don't believe it. I know they think that we're trying to trick them or we're no good libs or whatever they think it is. But we knew what he was going to do because we study this stuff. We knew he wasn't going to look out for you guys. We knew he was going to look out for his donors. We knew he was going to rebuild the swamp. We knew he was going to devastate healthcare. What did you think was going to happen when they took away Obamacare? Did you think they were going to cover more people? The Republicans? So that's what infuriates me, and that's why sometimes I do criticize outlets like CNN, because people who watch television are left confused. They're not sure. But if you know politics at all, there was a 0% chance that the Republicans would expand healthcare. You knew, anyone who knows politics knew that they would reduce health care. They would reduce the number of people who were covered. But guys like that honestly thought Trump would take care of them and the Republicans would expand health care. So yes, that's partly his fault, but it's also partly the media's fault for not making it clear enough. And by the way, for being obsessed about the personal stuff and the Russian stuff.
Yes.
And not focusing on the policies that actually hurt guys like this.
So I have a lot to say about this. First of all, to your first point about us criticizing Trump supporters and where that came from. I want to be clear about something. So the things that I'm most fired up about and passionate about actually don't directly impact me in any way. I'm done with college. I have my master's degree. I have no student loan debt, okay? None of those issues are gonna affect me, okay? I have a great job. I'm living a great life. But the reason why I got fired up about those issues and the reason why I was upset on election night isn't because I'm upset about how my life is gonna turn out. It's because I believe in true patriotism, which is looking out for the American people, creating opportunities that you got to take advantage of that are being destroyed by politicians, mainly the Republican Party. That's the reason why I got fired up, right? So yes, was I highly critical? Did I say some very hurtful things about Trump supporters? I absolutely did, and I think you're right. Time is proving us right over and over again, and it will continue to do so, right? And it's clear in Trump's economic proposals. It's clear in what he wants to do with healthcare. He is not looking out for you. He claimed to be anti-establishment when in reality he was the exact type of person who exploited a corrupt political system for his own personal gain. He is not gonna look out for you, and I think that's clear. The other thing real quick that I wanted to add to all of this is, yes, the media is at fault because they do very superficial, surface level coverage of important issues. And it's not just the media that's at fault, okay? We as Americans deserve more and need to demand more from our politicians. What did Trump do on the campaign trail? All he did was exploit your rage. All he did was exploit your emotions. But he never gave you any concrete policy ideas. He never detailed any proposals. All he did was get up there, talk off the cuff, right? And embroider a ridiculously simplistic logo or a motto, I should say, on his stupid hat. That's all he did. You should have demanded more. We never talk about policy during elections anymore. All we talk about is the horse race. What did Nate Silver say? What did Nate Silver say? Who gives a fuck what Nate Silver says? What are their policies? Donald Trump didn't have any policy ideas or detailed policy ideas. Hillary Clinton did, but instead of actually talking about that, all she did was attack Trump for constantly talking shit. So that's what happened during this election. We as Americans deserve more and we need to demand more. No more identity politics. We need more demands on what these politicians are gonna do and how they're gonna do it.
So a lot of you watching get your news from online media, not just us, but you've already read the news in so many different outlets and you could actually look up their policy positions. But you have to remember, most people in this country still don't live in your world. They're older, and older people get their news from television. And television almost never talks about policy. So in this case, the part of the program that Trump and the Republicans are cutting is they would drop an addiction treatment and mental health mandate that covers 1.3 million Americans. But did the television guys tell you about the different ideas that the Republicans had for healthcare?
No.
Never.
Of course not.
Never. So this poor guy, he said, quote, I believed everything he said. Because what would Trump do? He was ironically the most typical politician. I'm gonna give everybody everything they want. You got a Christmas list, I'm gonna give it to you all. I'm gonna cover more people in healthcare and their premiums are gonna be lower. How? Give credit to at least Scott Pelley of CBS who kept asking him how? He said, I'm gonna do it. It's gonna be fantastic, it's gonna be tremendous. Yes, you should have had a little bit more. You should have been a little bit more incredulous about that as a voter. But then they never told you. The Republicans have never proposed expanding health care, nor are they ever likely to. If you vote for a Republican, they will cut your health care. They will cut your health care. And now look at what happened. They're proposing to cut it for about 25 million people. And this guy thinks if my son had health care, and he didn't, he was 24. And what's the Republican plan now? Hey, if you're young, you don't have to go on health care anymore. There's no more mandates. Don't worry about it. Take a chance. We'll lower premiums anyway. And then, oops, he didn't have health care. And in his case, he died. right? But they never told that guy that that's what was going to happen under Republican proposals. So
I feel bad for him, and I think that there's an interesting conversation taking place right now as to whether or not individuals should feel bad for Trump supporters who are now feeling buyer's remorse. But, you know, at the same time, we got to take responsibility for our actions. Donald Trump is a reflection of this country. And it's a reflection of a lack of critical thinking. It's a reflection of this obsession of nonsense, non-issues, polls, drama, the horse race, whatever it is. We need to demand more, and our media needs to do a better job in actually covering the issues that matter. Forget ratings for like half a second, just for 1 year as the election takes place, so people know what they're voting for. Hold these politicians' feet to the fire. That's all I'm asking.
But it's become one big reality show, so we shouldn't be surprised that a reality show host won the election. Yeah. Now, one last thing. People are wondering if Trump's numbers, in a different article today I read, they're dropping, and I talked about this earlier in the week. Are they dropping because of the travel ban and the Russian talk? No, that stuff's been happening for weeks and weeks and weeks. No, they're... The poll numbers are finally dropping because guys like this are going, oh, he didn't mean it. Of course he's not going to help us. He's going to help his big donor friends. That's why I'm telling you, Trump and the Republicans have no idea how badly they're going to get mauled. Because yes, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And at some point, the rubber hits the road, and that rubber hits the road when you lose your Meals on Wheels and you lose your health care and someone you know dies. Now, of course, in his case, his son died a while back before Trump got elected. But now you see the program that's getting cut that you thought was going to get added to.
Right.
And so that is what's happening today, is people go, oh, it turns out he's not going to drain the swamp. He is the swamp. Okay, we got to take another quick break. When we come back, you know, so there's a couple of things going on. One is yet another case of a Republican politician who has no empathy at all.
Oh, I'm gonna drag him in that story. Not physically, like.
He's gonna get dragged though. He's gonna get dragged.
Drag him.
And the LA Sheriff's Office goes after Wyclef Jean. But is it that clear? Is it that clear? I might have a surprising opinion on that.
He's only gonna be gone till November, so don't worry. That was him, right? That was a Wyclef Jean song? Okay. Anyway, we have that story and more when we come back. And he won't be gone till November, he's still around.
What?